Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
There is a huge movement happening, especially from this side of the clients.
The building and construction sector is still responsible for 40% of the global CO2 emissions in 2021. This is more than other sectors and puts the goal set in the Paris Climate Agreement of a global average warming below 2 degrees Celsius a long way off. It is not enough to look for CO2 reduction in primary building materials. We need other visions and actors to radically reduce our carbon footprint. As an architect, Dan Stubbegaard is an expert according to the consumption of resources and the great responsibility creating resilient, long-term sustainable solutions. Not only for buildings, neighborhoods, and cities, but also landscapes lasting for the next generations. An incentive to find new answers is Copenhagen's claim to be the world's first climate-neutral capital by 2025. In today's podcast episode, we take a look behind the scenes with our guest, Dan Stubbegaard from Kobe. We are Diane and Katharina from Jung.
Hello and welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. The architectural practice Kobe was founded in Copenhagen in 2006. Inspired by the transformation of Copenhagen from an industrial port city to a beacon for livability and sustainability. You are the leading figure in Kobe's work to create surroundings that actively contribute to extraordinary everyday life. Nice to have you with us today, Dan.
Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure. I've been looking forward.
We are shaped by Copenhagen, and Copenhagen is shaped by us. What a wonderful patriotic sentence, actually. Copenhagen has set itself ambitious goals. The city wants to be the first climate-neutral capital in the world by 2025, as we just heard. What strategies and concrete steps have been defined, and what does that actually mean for your work as the architects on site?
First of all, our office has had the pleasure of being a very active part in the development of Copenhagen the last 15 years. And there is a very big political vision, but also, you can say, a well-received vision in regards of turning the city of Copenhagen into a carbon-neutral city in 2025. And it's a goal which I think it's very important for everybody, all the citizens of the city, to understand that there is, a common vision of changing things. And some parts are quite normal and you will not experience it, and other elements are quite dramatic. So as an architect, having an address in Copenhagen and being an active part of its development, it's actually very important, but also a very interesting driver in our work to take part of such a strong vision. And that is in a way influencing our work quite a lot since it was put out some years ago. You spoke about the Paris climate goals and also the goals for Copenhagen, and there's other cities. Paris is extremely ambitious as well. There's also cities in Germany being extremely ambitious. And I think as an architect, it is a big driver to be part of a movement or be part of something where you need to actually strive for something different than what you have used to do. And I think that's very, very important.
Do you think the goal will be reached by 2025?
I never really have a complete clear picture in how this is being measured. And I'm sure the city will reach it on certain levels in regards to turning the city's energy consumption into 100% based on renewable resources like wind power. I think the city, like the municipality, in terms of what they are doing and how they are, in a way, running a public business, I think they're going to get very far on the internal lines in actually fulfilling this. But it's also, and that's what I hope we can discuss today, it is still very abstract for me, but also for everybody, I guess, ordinary people. How do we measure this? And how do we actually create these transitions as well? And I think some parts are very easy to understand and other things is extremely abstract or on a large scale where you just say, but this has nothing to do with me. I cannot have an impact on this personally. And that's maybe one of the big challenges in creating a transition to a much more sustainable world. That is that if everybody is saying, I'm too small in this, I cannot do a difference, I will just go ahead with my normal behavior, then we will not accomplish these very, very important goals everybody needs to reach.
Absolutely.
Was there a certain starting point?
Actually, yes. 2 years ago, I was taking part of the yearly, it's called Folke meeting, public meeting in Bornholm in the Baltic Sea. It's a Scandinavian event. It's also happening in Sweden. It's actually a democratic festival where all the influential politicians are taking part, business leaders, bottom-up organizations. And I was taking part of this meeting and had some lectures and events and talks. And then I spoke with a client in regards to a specific assignment. And in this meeting, they said, Dan, Kobe is a great company. You do exciting architecture, but you don't have a sustainable profile, so we cannot use you for this assignment. I was pretty shocked, but also it was a reality check for me and Kobe that we were behind. To be quite frank, it's actually first when you really experience it on your own business that actually you are not keeping up, that you actually realize that you have to do something. So I came back to the office and a week after, I just initiated a full day where 130 architects took a day off and we discussed how can we change? What is important for us? And actually, you can say, created a new meaningfulness with our work. And we have worked really hard the last 2 years to actually implement knowledge, competences, and also implementing new processes in how we develop architecture than we did before. So I call it, we had this day zero, where we actually started to redo things in a very different way. And it's been a lot of hard work and it's still an ongoing journey. And we also have realized some pretty hardcore challenges being an architectural office and being a company who's advising clients to work with sustainability, that we actually had a lot of holes in our competences we had to fill out and find new partners and develop this further.
You just mentioned like this one client. I mean, the office was founded in 2006 and you developed so many projects since then. What changes have you noticed in the client's requirements regarding this sustainability and climate neutrality? Is there like more requirements coming up or are you the one leading the clients to a more sustainable architecture?
I think what is really important to state is that there is a huge movement happening these days. And I think it's especially from this side of the clients or many clients, both public clients, but also private clients. And I think what is very important is that you need to look at this in a multifaceted way. And many clients, they require DGNB certified building and certifying and certifying. And I think, which is really good, but we need to add on this. And that's turning things into systematic thinking, into scalability, LCA analysis in regards to registering materials, which it's pretty crazy that a client is investing millions into a product, you can call it, which is a building or architecture, but they don't know what they're buying. You can go down to the local supermarket and buy a gallon of yogurt or milk or sausage, and you know exactly what the ingredients are. But if we speak about the building industry, there's such a long way to go to actually know what you are buying and what we are building with and why we are building with these certain materials and what is the specification of a building. And I think that's one element we are really figuring out. How do we actually work on this? Because buildings are extremely complex processes and there's a lot of economy put into it. And I think that's one element we are really trying to help clients to understand that they also have a responsibility to ask demands in regards to what are they actually buying when they ask the building industry to construct an urban space or a city neighborhood or building.
Thinking about your supermarket example, usually we're looking for like regional products. We're asking like, where does it come from? Is it like the time when it's really growing or is it like imported from, I don't know, South Africa or South America or wherever? Do they ask like the same questions with the building materials?
Well, so far until now, not at all. Nobody has the overview in the past, let's say just 2 years ago, had the knowledge or the insight in what is actually put into the building. And there's great tools, SEA analysis tools and stuff like that. And I think that's one where you can say, wow, we really got far in 2 years, or the building industry has to change, because I can experience that clients are starting to ask us questions like this. And it's a huge, huge challenge, and it's demanding very different competences, skills, and tools to work with that.
As architecture influences people's everyday lives, that's what we heard, or that's what we hear from your answer. In your opinion, what are the most urgent issues that need to be addressed with the support of architecture and design?
I first of all, have to say I see a great future for architecture and design, because I really think design and architecture has a very significant role in changing people's behavior towards a more sustainable living, basically. Both to accommodate a more sustainable living, but also in a way to push people's behavior somewhere else than we have been used to. So I think one of the key solutions in this huge challenge humankind basically globally is facing is to change behavior. If we are able to do that, we can do this. But if we are not, we're not going to accomplish the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement or even a local goal like Copenhagen has for 2025. So I think one of the key roles for architecture and design is through architecture and design to accommodate in a good way or in a futuristic way or in a higher quality way, change of behavior. And I think that's maybe we can specify quantities, numbers, certifications, all that. But I think one of the biggest drivers here is actually change of behavior.
Is that what you're referring to with the sentence, we live in a one-to-one laboratory, on your website?
Yes, because we have to see it like that. We have to test things. We also have to understand some is not going to work out and other elements is maybe going to be very successful and become drivers of changing behavior. Like one example is that we have been involved in the design of a super fast charging station here in Scandinavia for a Danish energy company called Clever. And in that design process, it was really, you can say, the core design of that process was to identify the change from a traditional gas station to something completely new, which was improving the experience of people stopping their car and either refueling with the fossil gas, black stuff, you can say, or bad stuff, or recharging your car with the clean energy. And what we did was to build these recharging stations in wood, a completely new material sense in that infrastructural landscape. We built it so it was possible to disassemble it and put it up somewhere else or upcycle all materials. And all these fast charging stations is combined with a biodiversity project, a small landscape project, which means that there's birds singing and there's strawberries you can collect in a certain time of the year. And there's exercising equipment. So when you stop recharging your car, you're also able to recharge yourself. And it's not a commercial space. It's actually complete the opposite things that what you experience at a Monarch at the highway. And what is really extraordinary, that design here in Scandinavia, and especially here in Denmark, have become the icon of a transition within infrastructure. And it's on the front page of the new Danish government's investment plan in infrastructure the next 5 years. And Clever, the company, they now understand the power of this design because they don't even need to put a signage on it. Because the iconic value that you go to a recharging station built in wood and there's a landscape is a completely new image and part of an identity that suddenly you have invested in an electrical car and you are driving on green energy.
That leads us perfectly to our next question. As a part of the annual Copenhagen Architecture Festival, you wrote a personal letter to the Lord Mayor of Copenhagen.
Oh, yeah.
Your message was to fight monotonous architecture and demanding sustainable buildings and retain and cultivate diversity. resulting that Copenhagen can be a city for everyone in the future. What did he answer? Or did he answer?
No, he did not answer.
Really?
Or not in a direct way. But I spoke with him. And indirectly, he also answered in a newspaper article where he was also addressing some of the topics I addressed as well. And first of all, I have to say that one of the biggest challenges I see in our current cities is that one of the main roles of a city is that they are having the role of being an economical driver in the real estate market. I think all big European cities is facing the challenge of rising housing prices, and a city is becoming a market, which I really sincerely do not think is good. And one of the issues I addressed in this open letter to the mayor was that I think the city and the public sector, which is very strong in Scandinavia, has a role to plan towards a much more diversified city, which is a city which is accessible for everybody, poor and rich, and also in terms of accelerating the demands in regards of a sustainable transition. I, for instance, asked if they were willing to address the demand in local planning in Denmark or in Copenhagen in regards of putting a limit on how much CO2 you are allowed to use in a city development or on a building site. So it's a parameter you have in a local plan. It's also how many parking places are you allowed or not allowed to build, the height of a building or the density or the programming. And I really think if you want to become a CO2 neutral city in 2025, you need to push kind of the demands through law. And one element could be that you start to ask demands in regards to the CO2 consumption when you build. And they're not doing that. It's too demanding. And I think they could easily do that. And it would really push us somewhere else. So that's some of the elements I addressed in this letter. And now he's not a mayor anymore here. And there's soon an election. But I think as an architect, I also have the responsibility to be part of a public debate and also push things in a debate. And I think that's sometimes the problem with architects, that we're too quiet in the debate as well. In early days, architects were really part of a public debate and were also much more noisy, you can say, in a debate. I think many architects are nervous in entering a political debate, for instance, because we're afraid of our business or saying things which is actually hurting our base of the business as well.
And what about the other side, your clients? Have you been confronted with clients who intentions turn out to be like pure greenwashing? And how do you react in such situations?
We have had experiences where we are nearly starting up a construction site and then our client comes and say, hey, could you not make this project GMB platinum? And then it's just like, it's too late. It's not possible. Or like applying upcycled plastic materials or wood on a facade because then it appears more green, which is maybe fine, but that's not how we solve these challenges. So yes, we are facing that, but I think it's a lot about being active and being part of the development from the very early steps on. And that I think we are pushing as architects that we need to be involved on an earlier stage. And I think there is a lot of low-hanging fruits to be harvest in regards to doing sustainable decisions.
The topic of sustainability also plays a major role within your own office. You have made a list of CO2 emissions, including foods and beverages, as main items, as well as air flights and business travels. What specific adaptations have you made referring to your comportment as a result?
You can say that we have a sustainable strategy within our office, which is a two-string strategy. Number one, as you are mentioning, is that we, within our company or office, needs to be much more aware and change our behavior in regards to our CO2 consumption. So that's about like changing your own behavior. And the second string is that we believe that through smart advising and good architectural design, we can really do a large impact through guiding our clients in the right decisions. And actually, the first string is the small one. We have had a very open dialogue within our office, and it's super interesting. For instance, turning our lunch, in Denmark, we eat lunch together every day. and turning it from a 5 days meal where we have meat every day to turn that into only a 1 day meat meal and the rest is vegetarian.
Vegetarian, yeah.
And I tell you, that had a huge impact in our CO2 account in our company. I was so surprised about that.
Positively or negatively?
Positively, of course. But there is also some of our colleagues who really couldn't see themselves being fully vegetarian. So it was a big discussion in regards to this. And travel, I think COVID-19 have helped us significantly on that account. But I actually think it is also going to change because we are not going to look back after the COVID is over and the pandemic is reduced and we are back to normal. I don't think it's going to be back to normal. I think one of the big advantages of the COVID-19 is that people have learned that you don't necessarily need to travel in a plane every single time you need to meet. But this works fantastically that we can do this online and on the distance as well. We are calculating our CO2 emission every year in the office, and we have some strategies to lower it, and suddenly it becomes more and more difficult. But I think we need to have a clear understanding ourselves in our behavior, what it actually does to our CO2 account. The big impact from our side as architect is that we can change through our design significantly the impact on the environment in the future, I think.
We Germans are always looking to Copenhagen, like how the city can function with all these cyclists within the city, for example, how good and well organized it is. And how badly structured the German cities are, some of them actually, because they don't even have the space for cycling people, even though more and more would like to, you know, reach their office by bike, for example.
Yeah, actually, you can extend that idea for whole Denmark, right? Not only Copenhagen. Yeah, that's true. The president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has proclaimed the idea of a new European Bauhaus. And as you have experience in interfering with politicians, Dan, what do you think about that? And what would you do if you could contribute to this idea?
I think this is one of the best political visions and maybe one of the most useful visions, the Bauhaus 2.0. I have read and we are actually using it right now. So I think Ursula von der Leyen is one of my favorite politicians right now because I think it's an extremely bold, but also very hands-on political vision, which they have formulated. And I think it's also addressing the urgency and the need of change. And I really hope the European Union, besides wording it and framing it, are going to push through its significant influence, especially in regards to investments, so we can do this transition. I think it is actually inspiring political text and something we have discussed a lot in our office and have used actually directly in some recent designs as well. To actually test up towards the new Bauhaus, are we actually doing it or are we not doing it or are we just talking about it or are we actually greenwashing or is there actually a substance which is fulfilling this? And I think this is really... I think it should be on the pensum on all architect schools to actually read it and understand it and then actually to design for the Bauhaus 2.0. It's super cool. I wonder what the real Bauhaus people would say.
We can't ask them, unfortunately. What do you think he would say?
I think they would actually see it as a new step within modernism in many ways, but also discussing the importance of content rather than the importance of aesthetics. And I think that's something we are also talking a lot about in regards to sustainability, because I'm lacking, and it's coming right now, right? For instance, in DGNB certified, that aesthetic sustainability is a very important element because it's discussing whether it's long-lasting, whether it's flexible, and whether it's actually having an aesthetic value, so you want to keep it rather to take it down. And I think that could be a hyper interesting discussion to speak with them about, like the importance of aesthetics in regards to creating sustainable solutions as well. They're also mentioning it in Bauhaus 2.0. It is a very important element to actually talk aesthetics, beauty.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have one last question, Dan. What is your wish for our future?
we have touched it in our discussion, but my biggest wish is that we are able of turning this into a potential in changing things in a different way. We haven't addressed this in this talk, and it's a long talk as well. But I think the role of nature, I just read about Humboldt, and as you can say, the first kind of explorer were able to see the link in nature and the importance, how the impact of one natural resource could touch another one, etc. And I really think my wish for the future is that we as humans are being binded again closer together with nature, because then you will start to understand the whole kind of systematic again, which I think we maybe have lost. I hope that could be one of the outcomes of the time we are in right now, if we need to succeed, that is actually to connect us better with nature again. What do you think?
I think actually that especially this COVID period was like a very strong catalyzation just to move back to the really important things.
Yeah.
And it's mostly the very simple things we really need. And especially the need of nature was so clear and so strong within the last year. I wouldn't even expect that nature would become so important for me, to be honest.
That is interesting.
I mean, I totally agree on the sustainability topics within the cities and architecture, etc. But really being able to enjoy the beauty of nature again in kind of a very silent and very focused way, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
And it's very nice.
One discussion here in Copenhagen has been during the COVID-19 is the pressure and the need for nature in the city. Like everybody needed to take their daily walk and get out of their Teams meetings and work and house. And there was a huge pressure on the green spots and the recreational spots here in Copenhagen. And it's actually pushed a pressure on the politicians now to actually, so how do we develop better parks, more recreational spaces? Because you could actually really feel the pressure on those spaces in the city and the value of them as well.
And I mean, how important was fresh air, daily fresh air a year ago?
But before, Katharina, nobody was thinking of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's why I'm speaking about this kind of trying to connect us again closer to nature, both in regards of consumption of resources and natural resources, animals, biodiversity, what do we eat, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, we were forced to face reality, and it's like a consequence of our behavior. And I really do have another last question, a very last question. Regarding all this requests of changing our behavior and, you know, all the challenges, what advice would you give your younger you?
It's a very good question. It's a very difficult question. I think what is nice about getting older and more experienced is certain things is becoming more easy. You see things, you predict things, you are experienced, so you can navigate easier. But I also have to say, because when you're getting older and more experienced, you also miss out things. What I would recommend if I would be younger or a younger generation is to really remember to open up and explore things and actually not follow a trajectory, but actually try to diversify or do the different from what this person is doing next to you and all these things. And I think actually that's what we need to do. That's in regards to innovation and having people who is able of challenging the norm of normality. And that's what I'm very focused on in my age, with my experience. I'm not super old, but I don't know. I'm in the middle of everything. And I think to actually really force yourself to be open, it's actually getting more and more difficult the more experienced you're getting.
Thanks, Dan, so much. Thanks for spending your time with us.
No, thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
And it was a pleasure for us listening to your thoughts and to your visions. And to say it in your mother tongue, I'm sure I will say it wrongly. Farewell and take care.
Farewell. And let's meet again in 2025 to test whether Copenhagen really accomplished this vision of being climate neutral.
Many thanks to our listeners as well. We're looking forward to share our upcoming Jung Architecture Talks podcast with all of you. Tune in on jung.de/podcast.